Hi, welcome to Be My Fetish. Be My Fetish is a podcast that aims to explore legal paraphilia through discussions with my guests. We will talk openly and freely about different kinks, fetishes, fantasies, in order to deconstruct and destigmatize them until they no longer are taboo or source of shame. Trigger warning. This episode focuses on practices for which all participants have consented to, but that may shock, surprise, or offend some people. The episode mentions BDSM practices, role play, impact play. This podcast is only suitable for adults. By the way, my English is a bit rusty, so I am sorry about all the mistakes regarding the conjugation and the pronunciation. The episode was recorded with a computer, so the sound is not perfect, but I hope you will understand and enjoy this episode. For this 12th episode, but first one in English, which will be divided in two parts, I receive Emily and Gabrielle, creator and producer of the adult animated series Welcome to Kinkyville. In this first part, we'll talk about roleplay. How does it make them feel? Can we use any type of rope without any risk? What is a rigger? What is a bunny? We'll go through some of the basics of rope play and impact play. We'll also talk about what is sub, dom space, what is sub and dom drop, how do they accept themselves and not feel guilty, ashamed about being into kinky stuff. Hi, thank you for being here. So today I'm with Gabrielle and Emily. Can you introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm Gabriel. I am a professional trailer editor in Hollywood. I am directing and producing, co-producing with Emily, the Welcome to Kinkyville pilot and crowdfund campaign that we just recently wrapped.
And I'm Emily Blake. I'm a script supervisor and a writer. And yeah, I created Welcome to Kinkyville, and I'm going to star in it and write it and co-produce it and all of that good stuff.
Yeah. That sounds so exciting. Okay, and what kinks do you have?
So my big kink for me is just DS and bondage and power dynamics, power play, dominance and submission, and I enjoy the role of a dominant and just being able to have control over a partner, consensually, of course. In the bedroom and sometimes outside of the bedroom, I enjoy having certain controls and dynamic protocols day to day. And as for the type of play that I'm into, I very much enjoy rope. Rope is the main thing I like to partake in. But I also enjoy other forms of bondage, whether it's like some of the leather straps or bondage devices and whatnot, whatever I can get my hands on.
Okay.
And impact play too, you know, flogging. I really enjoy flogging and, you know, paddles and some caning and some crops. Verbal play and I dabble with some, apologize for that sound. We have a dog in the room.
No worries.
I also dabble in it's exhibitionism a little bit and public play and some role play and
mm-hmm. Okay, so
a lot of
interesting things, right? While we were preparing the episode, you also mentioned role play, and I think Emily is also into it, right?
Yeah, well, that's how we started. We're no longer together, but we were a couple for a while. He was my dom, and that was like our first scene was role play, and then as we spent a lot of time together, we kept going to classes and doing tutorials and learning. For a while, I was the guinea pig and he tried new rope ties and stuff. So yeah, I enjoy it. I'm more impact play is my favorite.
Okay.
I do like rope, but yeah, impact play is where I live.
And at what age did you discover that you had a kink for ropes and how?
Well, I actually came to kink maybe around 30, between 30 and 31, I think is really kind of like when I started having this awakening of like, oh, there's this alternate lifestyle or alternate, you know, not vanilla forms of sexual pleasure that I would like to experiment and explore. So I think it was around the time that I was 30 or 31, so almost 10 years ago, about 8 or 9 years ago now.
For me, it wasn't until I was 36. I got divorced, and then it was just like, what else can I learn about myself? And then I started researching, was like, oh, hey, look at this thing I'm into. Oh, yeah.
And so how did you discover it? What was like the first time you actually tried role play?
I don't know if I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I just knew that I wanted to try all these things. And then I hooked up with him. And like I said, our first scene, he busted out some rope and it just sort of went from there. So it wasn't necessarily something I'd been intentionally looking to get into, but I was kind of open to trying all kinds of new things. And then he was like, hey, I'm going to tie you up. And I was like, okay. And it was fun.
And how did it go exactly? Like, so you didn't know anything about rope. Gabrielle, you actually...
I researched a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, nothing serious.
Okay.
She had been on FetLife. So she knew about Shibari and it wasn't like this thing that she met me and then I was like, it is this rope and people tie up it. It's like, so she was familiar with the fetish scene a little bit and with Shibari as a fetish and whatnot.
And so I'm just wondering, can we actually use any type of ropes?
Well, actually, it is preferred that you do not use for tying. You want to always avoid cotton rope because cotton rope has no friction and it'll collapse on itself. And if it collapses on itself, then it'll collapse around your joints and can cause, you know, it can damage your joints, your nerves. It can cause blood clots. So you definitely want rope with friction, and those traditionally are jute or hemp rope.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of people start with nylon, and I would avoid nylon for the same
reason.
And I know a lot of riggers use nylon, but I don't think it's good.
And definitely, yeah, experienced riggers know how to use nylon in ways that can make it work, but the thing to watch out when you're buying a lot of those, like, beginner kits for kink, a lot of them, wrongly so, I seriously think, they have cotton rope, and really cotton rope is not the kind you should be using for kink, especially if you're a beginner. Especially if you're just winging this.
Okay.
You should never wing it. You should always, like, YouTube some tutorials, which, again, there's plenty. Yeah, take a class, or the internet is just full of so many people just trying to spread awareness and educate people, you know. And that's the big thing about kinksters and sex-positive people. We want all of us to get pleasure and do this right and have a good time, which is why there's so many sex educators online, you know, big and small, with big channels and small channels.
That's how you know when you should avoid someone, is if they don't believe that. Like, if you're thinking about seeing with someone and they're not like, hey, what do you want out of this? If it's all about what they want out of it, then yeah, walk away.
Yeah, that's usually a very good red flag.
Yeah, you need an actual, like, mutual interest and an honest and open communication about what all people involved actually want. You used an interesting word. You said rigor. Can you explain what a rigor is?
So traditionally in the BDSM scene, rigors is one of the labels used that people who practice rope that identify them, a rigger. They rig you with rope.
They're the tire.
Yeah.
Whereas a word for people who get tied is rope bunnies.
Rope bunnies, yeah.
Rope bunnies.
Okay.
Rope bunnies, yeah. I actually do not know for a fact where the bunny part came from, but
yeah.
It's common usage. Like, if you enjoy being tied up, you're a rope bunny. And it's funny because when you think of animals that get tied up, bunnies are not the ones that first come to mind. But I can also see how a bunny sounds way cuter than like a rope pig.
Yeah, completely. Definitely. So you also mentioned the fact that we could get injured while doing role play. How can we actually avoid these kind of things? You mentioned doing formation, looking online, listening to podcasts. Are there other things that we can actually do to practice like a shibari bondage in a safer way?
Number one, one's communication. I think in a lot of situations, when you're the sub, you think you don't have a job, but it's just the dom tying you up, and you're the top tying you up, and you just kind of lie there. But that's not true. The whole time, your job is to communicate. If something hurts, if your toe goes numb, if anything's uncomfortable, speak up immediately, because you're, I mean, a mild amount of discomfort is going to happen, but like, if you know you can't sustain this position for too long, or if something is pinching, or, you know, or like I said, numbness, report that immediately. You need to speak up. That's, I feel like that's the number one way to safety, is have open communication and make sure that the top is listening.
You need to advocate for yourself, because sometimes accidents happen. Sometimes the rope moves in a way, maybe the rigger, the top, they didn't notice that the rope moved out of place. And so, and there were times where I was tying Emily, and Emily and I were together for over three years, and we did a lot of tying in those years, and take nothing for granted. Sometimes Emily would be like, oh, something doesn't feel right in this side or whatnot, and you know, I'll be like, I know what I'm doing. Like, if she's not feeling comfortable, hey, something could have moved, you know.
There was one time when I was in agony. Like, I immediately, my wrists were, like, crushing together, and I just started being like, go, 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 go. And rather than, like, tough it out, it turns out a knot had slipped.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize it, and it was an unsafe situation, and because I spoke up, he did something. But you also have to feel like you're safe enough. You shouldn't ever be doing rope with someone you don't feel like you can communicate with. Like, if you feel like they're going to get mad at you, then that's not a good situation.
So it requires a lot of communication, but also observation from the dub to see if everything's okay, if the rope hasn't moved or anything. I'm wondering, is your kink eroticized or sexualized or not, and why?
For him, for sure.
I think it's traditionally mainstream. You know, commonly people think of kink as being a sexual thing, but kink for a lot of people isn't sexual. A lot of people very much enjoy kinks without a sexual outcome to it. Some people enjoy being tied up because maybe it has a calming effect on them, you know, particularly a lot of people with anxiety. This is something that I have found in my own personal experience. You find a lot of people that turn to people with some type of anxiety and whatnot, that turn to BDSM as for ways to cope with their just with their anxiety, their noise in the head and whatnot. And research has been done about that stuff, about sometimes just, you know, bounding somebody, it does have an effect on the brain. And I'm not qualified to speak about that stuff, but it's not something that I have come across in readings and articles before. But yeah, so yeah, for me, kink is I very much enjoy kink for the purposes of sexual pleasure. But a lot of people don't.
Yeah, I can be tied up and, like, spanked with a paddle, and that's fine. Like, I don't necessarily need... I mean, the sex is fine. It's great. But I don't necessarily need that. I get a lot out of just being sort of bound and then having my ass beat. it does have a very calming effect. I can, like, fall asleep like that.
Yeah.
And I think we went to one rope class one time where there was an elderly woman who just took her shirt off. She's tits out. And she just had somebody tie her up, and then she just sort of sat there for, it felt like half an hour, just sitting, being half naked, tied in a rope. She didn't need anything else.
Yeah.
You never know, whatever does it for you.
And I think you just need to be aware about what is it that you want to get about those places. For example, like, I'm somewhat active in the scene, and you make friends, and you make sometimes friends in classes and whatnot. And for example, one personal experience I had is, there was this class that I would go to regularly, and you start building a community. You start building these people that you see regularly and build friendships with. And this person was like, oh, I really like your tying. You know, I'm trying to get tied up more. Like, I hate that I only get tied up twice a month in this class. You know, hey, would you ever mind maybe tying together outside of class? And I told this person, yeah, here's the thing. I only really tie people in privately that I'm actually involved with sexually.
Yeah, I see.
And she was like, oh, okay, that totally makes sense. Sorry. So, like, that's a way for me to kind of let them know, here in class, it's one, I'm here to work on my skill and learn more, but when I do it privately and recreational, I'm doing it for a different outcome, for a very specific type of outcome.
Yeah, I completely understand. And what does it actually make you feel? What sensations on the physical, maybe emotional, psychological level what does it make you feel?
That's deep. For me, I think it's definitely there's a relaxation capacity to it because I'm one of those people who's just constantly, my job is to multitask. I do nothing but like think 8 steps ahead of where I need to be later today. I don't stop. My brain does not stop. And like the only time it stops is if I'm tied down being flogged or something. And then I eventually, because at first my brain will still be going. And then after about 45 minutes of just lying there with nothing to do but think about how you've got a paddle smack in your butt or something, you can't escape. Eventually I will just stop. And my brain will stop. And I'll just feel like, for a couple of minutes.
It's not unlike meditation. I mean, the whole point of meditation is about centering yourself and just kind of like about finding this inner stillness. And I think what some people, it's really hard for them to come to that state voluntarily. But some people don't want to go to that state voluntarily because maybe it's just not in their nature, because maybe they just have that type of personality where stillness is not something that they can achieve very easily. You know? And that's where you get into the whole spectrum of dynamic. It certainly is different for everybody, what everybody experiences. Emily is somebody that needed, like, for her to achieve that state, it required a lot of effort, but not like effort, but it definitely required a process where we've met people who maybe sometimes they have a very specific type of relationship with BDSM or don't require it, but like we knew one person who all she had to do was touch rope, and maybe there's a trigger there, maybe there's a backstory there. Just touching rope put her in that subspace, and so like
not me. I gotta have like a whole 2 hour performance before I go to sleep.
It's not unlike orgasm for people or women. How some women can orgasm really easily, and some women require more work. You know, so it's not unlike that. And some people can reach that state very easily, immediately, but some people require very specific. They need their bodies to be engaged in very specific ways.
Yeah,
you know?
This is why
that's what I would liken it to meditation.
Completely. This is why I think the communication part before the practice, before the session, is actually really important. So, like, get to know your partner. Make sure what do they want, what do they like, what are the limits, so that everyone will actually enjoy the session. You mentioned the term subspace. Can you explain what it is?
It's when you feel the sense of, well, it's a little different for everybody, but generally speaking, it's a sense of sort of zen. Like you're in a sort of a cloudy, hazy, blissful state, and you've been brought there through some kind of kinky activity.
Okay.
I guess the way a lot of people can also experience it is runner's high. You'll have a lot of like athletes or adrenaline junkies who like maybe they work out very hard to just achieve a very like heightened state of euphoria. So it's for some people it can be very euphoric, for some people it can be very calming, you know. But it's certainly just
it creates like a hormone rush throughout your body, so that dopamine, adrenaline, I don't know what it is. I don't know anything about science. But there's a science-y reason that a bunch of chemicals happen in your body, and then you just feel, it's like feeling high, but without any of the, really any, well, there can be a downside. There's no, like, physical, you know, you're not going through brain cells or anything, but you can go through some drop after that. So there can actually be a downside to it. But in the moment, you're just super blissed out and chill.
And is there a dumb space as well?
Oh, there is. Yeah, there very much is. And again, that's just a high. Again, it's not unlike what the sub experience is. I mean, for me, it's just this tunnel vision. Everything just disappears during the moment, you know. And again, for me, it's very much a state of euphoria.
Okay, I see. And you also mentioned the sub drop. Can you develop on this?
It's this feeling, like, I think it's also based on all those chemicals raging around your body and reacting to everything you've been through, and then now you come down from it, and it's like, you know, when you have a sugar high and then you drop, you sort of go, uh-oh. But in the case of sub-drop, it tends to lead, not the same for everybody, but it tends to lead to this, like, real sense of insecurity, maybe crankiness, just if you have a reaction. And it happened to me a couple months ago, and I couldn't figure out why I was such a, I was playing D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, and I couldn't figure out why my character was suddenly being very mean to everyone. And I realized, oh, right, I'm probably going through sub-drop right now, and I'm just having this reaction where I'm just crabby and insecure and feeling down. And when that happens, it's important that you communicate with your partner.
Yeah.
You know, that you're going, I'm going through sub drop, help, and then they'll be like, you're still very good, I love you very much.
Yeah, it very much is like the coming down from a sugar high, or even not to be reductive of women experience, but kind of like postpartum too, you know, is it your body, I don't know, yes, but it's just your body just is just chemicals moving back and forth and whatnot, and for some people it can happen within hours of a scene, and
oh,
some
really?
People it can happen days later. The timelines really vary for everybody.
And I remember we were in a class once, and a pro dom, we were waiting for the teacher to arrive, and a pro dom who was just hanging out described it as a lot of it's fight or flight. Like your body is, especially if you're bound and you're being, you know, there's impact play or any other kind of thing that you can't escape from, wax play, whatever. Your body is like, I gotta get out of here, but it can't because you're tied down. And it's like, well, I gotta fight back. You can't because you're tied down. So you're triggering the fight or flight, but you can't do either of those things. So instead, your whole body gets this just rush through it because you can't react. So it's all, you're all forced to deal with it internally, and it causes all that chemical stuff. So after that's over, like any other adrenaline rush or any other bodily like traumatic event, essentially, you come down from it, and then you're like, and then you're tired.
It's like,
and sad.
It's like those students who just have like a meltdown after they do like the attorney or the doctor test.
And so this is when care is actually important. When the dominant actually observe and communicates with the sub to make sure that everything's okay, and how can I make you more comfortable? How can I help you or anything, right?
Yeah, just, and it goes both ways. The dom also gets dumb drop. I actually had a dumb drop experience where actually Emily, one of the arrangements as part of our relationship is that Emily was supposed to kind of check in with me before going on a date or meeting somebody, and this one week she didn't. And she went and had this great date, and I was happy for her genuinely, but of course you get insecure, like, oh, she had such a great time, like she didn't even like check in with me, and you're insecure, and that's just because also you're non-monogamous, so that's also a whole other like a whole other ballpark of insecurities and emotions you have to navigate, and it's like, oh yeah, like she didn't check in with me, like, and she went and like met up with a person, had a really great time. Okay, you know, whatever.
I think that's less dom drop and more polyamory.
That too. You know, I think it was it actually happened that week. Both of my partners, it happened the same thing. Both of them didn't check up with me, or
ouch.
One of them didn't check up before the other one didn't check up with me after. So it's one of those that will really test your insecurities. And that's a little bit of insecurities too, and whatnot. So
I think for a lot of people specifically in the BDSM world is that like a lot of, the way a lot of subs feel like, especially if you're sort of a raging feminist in your daily life, you're like, wait, what's wrong with me? Why do I like being submissive to a man? You know, I think for doms, it can be like, what's wrong with me? Why do I like these things? Am I psychotic? Evil, whatever. And so a lot of times you go spiraling down that rabbit hole. And
I can't believe I did this to a woman. Like, that's not the way I was raised. And again, it's really hard sometimes to just reprogram your brain, you know, when you have been brought up a certain way all your life.
Exactly. So how do you actually manage when you're feeling guilty, ashamed, like you're freaking out, like in your mind, in your body, you feel dirty, you feel awful? What is the process? How can we actually do to handle this situation and to get through it?
I think the first thing is like contact your partner, you know, any decent partner in a dominant submission situation is going to be there. is going to be like, oh, you're feeling this way, reassure you, make sure you know that you're cared for, that, you know, there's nothing wrong with what you did. But in the end, I used to try and figure out, like, why am I into these things? What is it? What happened to my childhood? What's my brain like? What's going on? And after a while, you're not always going to know.
Yeah.
So you're just like, look, I'm into this weird shit. It's done. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm good. So I just sort of think, did you consent? Did I consent? Did you enjoy it? Did I enjoy it? If the answer to that is all yes, whatever it is, however weird, long as nobody got hurt, and everybody's happy with the outcome, there you go.
Yeah.
Nothing to feel bad about.
I think the other thing is also just to have community and support. In addition to your partner, like, something I tell new people to the scene a lot, besides educate yourself, is to also make friends with other like-minded people. Like, if you're a submissive person, make friends with other submissives. Join some online groups, you know? Like, and sometimes just going there and posting, because during COVID, you couldn't necessarily meet a person. Because a lot of these groups outside of COVID also will have gatherings and just socials to meet and socialize. But there's also online groups, and just sharing your experience with others like you, one, it doesn't make you feel alone. And you'll realize that what you're going through is not unique. And other people will also, their perspective of their experiences will inform yours a lot and can go a long way. Like another submissive telling you, oh, you know, that happened to me a lot, or sometimes I still struggle. And, like, it took me this long, or this is one of the ways that I managed to see through it, or same deal with dumps, you know, like, oh my God, like, I always feel bad every time I leave a bruise on her. Like, I do it at the moment, but afterwards, like, I just hear my mom or sister Anne from Catholic school just, like, scolding me and whatnot. Mm. and it's like, oh, you know, like, but just, you know, the brain can be fickle and play games on you sometimes.
I think you also need to be reassured that, like, you should never do anything that you don't want to do. Like,
completely.
I think that's a problem with subs sometimes, is we tend to want to please so badly that if some jerk comes along and is like, well, a real sub does this and you don't want to do it, you'll do it anyway. And you're like, well, I guess this is what a sub does and you have to do what you're told and all that. And you don't, if you don't want to do it, you don't do it. You just, that I think is such an important thing. Because that's another part of it, is some days you feel like, oh, I wish I hadn't done that thing. Now I feel bad. You know, it's like, just if you don't want to do it, don't say no.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Okay.
So you already mentioned a few things, but do you have any advice for people who would like to try rope play?
Watch stories, go to classes. Yeah.
start easy.
Start with the basic stuff.
Single column or something.
Yeah, start with the basic stuff.
Yeah. Don't try to, like, suspend someone after you've done it two times or something.
if you can go to a physical in-person class, even better.
Always have emergency shears, not scissors, like EMT shears next to you when you're doing it, just in case you have to cut your way out.
Yeah.
Listen to each other, talk to each other. But you can also self-tie. Just because you don't have a partner doesn't mean you can't do it. There's self-tie tutorials, and you can learn on yourself, on your leg or whatever.
Okay, and what about safe word?
Always respect safe words, always. Even if you don't use them, you should always have them. Any top who says they don't believe in safe words, that is also a red flag for me.
Yeah, definitely.
You never know what you're going to get into. Sometimes subs can get nonverbal as well. They'll get so far into subspace, this doesn't happen to me. Really wish you did. But there's a lot of people, when they get into subspace, they don't know how to communicate. They can't talk anymore. So it's also a good idea to have a physical safe word, like snapping your fingers or, you know, some kind of noise that can be a safe word as well.
A bell or something you can drop in your hand that you can drop.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, I don't always pick an easy safe word. You know, of course, there's the colors. Green, red, yellow, or
my safe word is cricket.
Yeah,
because it's guttural.
Yeah, usually you want to keep it to two syllables. Don't try to go beyond three syllables. You know.
Okay, great. Earlier, you also mentioned you were both into impact play. Can you explain what it is?
It's getting smacked in the butt, or, you know, I feel like flapping is also in the butt. But yeah, any kind of, you know, you're making an impact on your body. You're getting hit with either an implement or your hand. You know, usually your butt, sometimes your face, sometimes your tits, sometimes other things.
There's a lot of places in the body that you can get hit, and there's a lot of props you can get hit with, and everybody has different thresholds of pain. Some people just want some light smacking, you know. Some people want welts, you know, and those are masochists. But some people just like the sensation on their body of, like, you know, a little stingy and whatnot.
Thuddy.
And some people want to feel that for days. Some people are like, please, I want to have trouble sitting down the rest of the week, you know.
My personal favorite is the flogger. If you let the flogger drop on a bare back, on the upper back, and then slide it across the back, that is, to me, the best sensation, because it stings when it hits you.
Okay.
And then you drag it across your back, and all those little tails on the flogger just kind of gently, it's like a little gentle rub. It's a nice feeling.
And just to show you how subjective it is, I knew Emily loved that. I've had partners who are like, don't do that. I don't care for that. Like, why are you doing that? Why are you caressing my back with the flogger?
I see. And so, what tools can we use for disking? Can we use, like, any kind of objects?
Pretty much, yeah. You can use your hand.
Start with your hand.
And start gentle. I've had experiences with people who are less experienced in kink, and when I tell them I'm into spanking, the first thing they do is just go, what? Like,
No, way too hard.
Yes. So you start, like, my favorite, I have a paddle that's leather on one side and, like, fake fur on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So one side is for whapping and one side is for, like, a gentle pad. And it's nice to, like do a bunch of whaps and then flip it around and do the soft side for a bit and just sort of go back and forth. But you want to start small. You want to go ebb and flow. You don't want to just whack, 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 whack. You want to be like whack, 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 and then a little pat, pat, and then but yeah, there's paddles, there's floggers, which we like. There's
canes, clubs.
Canes are great. I've really started to get into caning. You can use, you know, as we discovered, the wooden paddle brush. It's called the Pelvex. It looks like paddles. But if you did, like, a wooden hairbrush, that hurts. That's pain sucks. Yeah. I was like, let's try this brush one time. And then he whacked me with, like, three times. And I was like, let's not try that brush anymore.
But definitely start with your hands. Also, do a warm-up.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's always safer if you start with toys that are actually made for this as opposed to the paddle brush, because you might not realize how violent the paddle brush hurts. Yeah, or you don't want to break one of your, like, cooking spoons, like your ladle either, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, like, always. And there, again, there's a lot of these toy brands, they market to beginners, you know, and a lot of them will have specifically, like, you know, couples intro to kink or impact play, like, they'll have these packs specifically labeled, like, and marketed towards newbies, you know, and then they'll have those really mean looking ones for people who definitely want to go for something more extreme, you know. But yeah,
so it is really important, like, to use the proper objects when trying impact play. But I guess it is also really important, like, to know a few things about anatomy and how the human body actually works, like, on which part can I actually use this tool, because there are risk of injuries, right?
Oh yeah, you want to stay away from the spine and don't, like, you see that sometimes you'll see people posting welts they got with canes on their back, and it's just like, oh my god, never play with that person again. You should not have welts in that spot. That's so dangerous.
The ass is always the ass, because the ass is the meatiest part of the body.
Yeah.
It's always the best place to start. Start with the ass.
Yeah.
Start with the ass, and again, you can explore it from that. And again, there's tutorials online that'll tell you which parts to avoid. Vertebra. You should never hit a vertebra unless it's caressed with a flogger. You know. Joints. You know. You don't want to hit joints. You know. But yeah, you don't want to hit the neck.
Yeah, definitely. And what does it make you feel?
I think it's that sharp up, and then there's, like, a little rush afterwards. I think it's a lot of, I'm not really a pain slut, just a small amount of pain. But, like, when you are, it's the same thing, like, when you're bound and then you're released. It feels really good, that release. And I think I think any kind of impact play is a lot the same. It's like you get that whack. It's like a two-part experience. You get that whack of, like, oh, we got and then like that release after it's done. I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe, but
it's not on like a roller coaster. Some people really just enjoy the that relief, that ecstasy of like, woo, that was, you know.
There's also a rhythmic. If you get somebody who's really good at it, there's like a rhythm to it. Like flogging is like whack, 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 whack. And it's almost like after a while, it kind of lulls you into this little beat.
Why do people like spicy food? You know, why do people want to eat that tamale that's gonna put some hair on your chest?
And is there also like something going on the emotional level, maybe, or is it only physical?
It depends on the day. I mean, it depends on what kind of mood. Some days you just want a scene, and some days you're like, I want to cuddle, I feel bad. Just the other day, I was having a really bad day, and I asked my partner was like, how can I help you? And I was like, paddle me. But some days, just for fun, it just depends.
It depends on the person. Some people, the same way that I was asking about earlier, how some people cannot achieve stillness on their own, maybe. Some people really enjoy, and you hear about this sometimes on news or on the internet, how sometimes there'll be these seminars where people will go and just wail and cry, you know, because there's a catharsis to that. Some people find, like some people, and Emily was not one of them, but some people sometimes they want to be hit until they start crying and sobbing.
Okay.
Because for them, that's a cathartic. For them, maybe that's a release, you know. Like, there's something very cathartic about the crying and the wailing and just your body just releases a lot of energy when that happens, you know.
I'm not a pain slut, but we did take a class one time where there was a girl there. Somebody wrapped her leg really tight. In this really thin,
like fishing line almost type of.
Yeah, it was really thin, and it was clear that they had played before, so they were both safe because they knew each other. But she screamed bloody murder at him the whole time, fuck you, tear up all that stuff, and then when he released her, she was just like, ugh, she was just a mess because she was so that fight or flight kicked in, and she was in pain. And she was just dealing with all
the things. Emily was starting to get worried. Like, why is it nobody
concerning?
Clearly, they were having a low consent.
It was consensual. And then when we released her, you could see the euphoria of that release from the pain rush over her. And she was immediately in subspace. She was just so blissed out.
Okay, I see. And personally, how do you relate to your sexuality? Are you comfortable? Are you ashamed of it? Or are you fulfilled? Do you feel guilty, maybe? And why?
I don't feel guilty about anything. I no shame. There's no shame here. There's no reason. I mean, I dealt with it early on, but I just decided if it's consensual and everybody enjoys it, then there's nothing to be ashamed of. But as far as sexuality, I only recently realized that I was bisexual because I'm mostly into men. So I guess I didn't, and I've had, like, one of my best friends is bisexual, and he's just like, ladies, dudes, I don't care. For me, I prefer men, so I guess I never really thought that that counted until recently. I'm like, no, it's a spectrum, so.
Completely.
But, you know, nothing to be ashamed of, though.
I'm pretty comfortable in my sexuality. It took time, and Emily was present for a lot of that. But for one, I identify myself queer, and I like queer because I like the ambiguity of it, because while I am primarily attracted to women, you know, there are certain circumstances in which I'll play with people who are not female.
Can you actually explain what do you mean by queer? Because people don't always have the same definition for this word. So what is your definition?
That, for me, that's actually what I like, that is ambiguous to me. For me, it means that I am sexually attracted to people beyond my opposite sex, beyond the female sex. But the reason I don't necessarily use bisexual is because I think bisexual, I find that a little restrictive, because I find that a little binary. This is me personally. But I don't identify with bisexuality because I find the term a little binary. So I like saying that I'm queer because it's just more ambiguous. Because I'm under certain circumstances, which are very specific to kink and my kink. I very much enjoy playing with people who are not female. And I'm pretty open now, and out. And that was by choice. It wasn't always so, and I enjoy being out and out. Pretty much everybody that knows me know that I'm this kinky, non-monogamous, kind of slutty person, and I found a lot more satisfaction and inner peace being out and visible, because being in the closet about it and hiding it made me feel like hiding it kind of fed into something, the shame, in my opinion. Like, the fact that I was hiding it, for me, was feeding the shame. So me actually displaying it, I found it very empowering, you know, and I celebrated a lot more. So no, I don't feel ashamed or embarrassed, only when I get caught like in embarrassing situations.
Yeah.
But everybody at work knows about me. Like, I did a whole crowdfund campaign where my face, I wasn't the face of it the way Emily was, but I very much was participating in the campaign. So, like, all my friends and family who didn't know clearly knew.
So we did this, when we did the crowdfunding campaign, one of our motivators for people was every time we reached a certain threshold of money, we would release another video of him trying bottoming.
I saw that.
I got to whack him with a paddle. No, a cane. I got to whack him with a cane. I did not tie him up, but I got to be present for him being tied up. I got to drip wax on him. Oh, we got to turn him into a puppy.
Yeah.
that was really fun, him experiencing bottoming, and then I got to top.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And that for me was very therapeutic. And again, it just, this part that also was very important for my journey, because on the one part, I was embarrassed. Like, I'm embarrassed that people are seeing me do these things. I don't want people to think I enjoy this thing sexually. And then I caught myself, this is Gabriel, chill the fuck, like, what, you're making a show about ridding people of shame. Like, if you, like, get over yourself, what if you did, like, this stuff? Like, you're out here telling people they shouldn't be ashamed of it. So it's like, yeah, like, it's embarrassing because you look kind of goofy. Like, and sometimes we play the gags for me to look goofy. Like, I look goofy with this hood and my boxers and this tail, like, but it's also this thing of like, no, like, and that's one of the reasons I embraced it, you know. And that's why they kind of got more humiliating, not that they were, but like more just making
humiliation is a perfect thing,
more ridiculous. Yeah, that's one of the reasons it kept leveling up. One, because you gotta raise the stakes every time, but also I leaned into it like, no, you know what, I'm telling people that there's nothing wrong. And I'm gonna put my money where my mouth is, you know. Like, I'm gonna show, like I'm not into this, and whatever people think, like, whatever. Like, it's so, yeah. And for me, that was also very therapeutic. Like, I very much enjoyed doing that. not in the way a lot of people enjoy doing it, but I enjoy putting myself out there and saying, like, hey, you know. Let your inner freak out or whatever.
Yeah. And just have fun. And I was thinking, I don't know about United States, but in France, it's still sometimes quite difficult to talk about sex. So talking about kinks, fetishism, BDSM is even more difficult. How is it in United States? Is it, would you say it's okay to talk about sex and to talk about kinks with your friends and family? Just, I don't know, talking about impact play over dinner or during a walk or anything. I don't know.
We live in Hollywood, and we sometimes take for granted that we live in Hollywood, in California, and LA, which is like this liberal progressive bastion. And when you leave this area or you leave your circle of friends, it can be sometimes very sobering. The response, especially the crowdfund, and part of the crowdfund that we did for the Kinky Show is you literally have to reach out to everyone you know, because you start, you start with everyone you know. The first contributions are going to come from everyone you know.
Yeah.
And it can be very sobering and a wake-up call when sometimes people who you know your entire life reject you or just kind of like give you the cold shoulder or like, yeah, I don't agree with what you're doing. I can't believe you're doing this. Or why would you contact me with this? And it doesn't feel great. Like, you go into it kind of prepared for it. Like, not everybody's going to appreciate it. But at the same time, and this is what I made a point to focus. Like, I had, like, one of my closest uncles, an uncle that I very much love, never heard from him. And this is an uncle that I talk to a couple times a year, and I have a very good relationship with this uncle. He never responded to any of my text messages or nothing. And that hurt a little bit, you know, as somebody that I've also, like, had some intimate moments with and whatnot and share stuff with. But at the same time, you celebrate the unexpected responses from people. You know what? I honestly, like your cousin who's maybe very churchy or your friend who's maybe really, like I have some very vanilla friends who, like, who got married young and whatnot. It's like, I'm going to be honest. And when I talk to them, like, they literally did not know anything about BDSM, you could tell.
Yeah.
Either that or they were lying through their teeth. Like, what? Like, kinky, or whatever? And then they would make some generous contributions.
Yeah.
So then that in itself, and then that's what you lean on. And maybe it's because there's a personal relationship too, but at the same time, even acquaintances, I have some acquaintances, people that I just work with, who also sometimes were very generous. And it's just like, this is just some person I work with, or this is the friend I haven't spoken to in years.
Yeah.
and it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that you're contacting, hey man, I know you're not having like talks since like high school or whatever. We haven't seen each other since that guy's wedding. Hey man, I'm doing this thing, and would you mind giving me some money? and they're like, yeah, this looks fun. Yeah, this looks fun. Let's do it. And that is... So the rejections can sometimes wound you a little bit, especially when it's from people, you have an intimate relationship, close relationship with, but the validation from others can be very rewarding and very validating, you know.
Yeah, sometimes you actually have good surprises.
Yeah. I used to be a high school teacher, and I taught in an abstinence-only program, which in America means... the only thing you are allowed to teach kids is to say no to sex. Just don't. you cannot tell them about condoms. You can't tell them about the birth control. The answer is no, just don't do it, which obviously works great. So I would hear kids saying some things that were horribly wrong. Like, I remember once hearing a kid say that you can't get an STD from oral sex. And so he was just doing it as much as possible. And I was just like, you know what? I might get fired. And I would shut the door and be like, all right, kids, don't tell anybody we had this conversation. Let me explain some stuff to you. So I was doing it even then, and this was like ages and ages ago. But in California, it's a little better. But yeah, no, it's still a relatively taboo topic. And I think we did get a lot. I don't really have family much. The little I do have was fairly supportive, even if they didn't understand it. For the most part, the people on the internet were pretty supportive of us. Our friends were pretty supportive of us. But every now and then I would message someone and be like, hey, can you just retweet this? Can you tell people about our, you don't even have to contribute. Can you just tell people about our thing? And they'd be like, oh, I totally believe what you're doing. It's great. Can't share it because people will see it on my timeline and I can't risk it. You know, there are some people who are like, I'm trying to get a job at Disney. A friend of mine said she loves the project, but I asked her to do some voice work in it. She was like, I can't. I'm up for a job. And actually, she just landed a major job at a major network doing voice work. And I get it that you might not have gotten that job if they had this on your resume, you know? Yeah. So that was kind of we didn't really get a lot of hate mail. I was expecting way more.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Telling us we were going to hell.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this could be a steady stream, but mostly it was support. But
that's great.
It was also people saying, I totally support your idea. It's great. I hope you make it. I can't help you.
I love picking up fights. And every time we get the hate mail, I wanted to just kind of like engage them or just like troll them. And Emily's like, no. She would just like erase them. They don't exist. Don't give them the time of day.
I'm a long-time Twitter user, and I don't have an army of trolls after me.
It's like,
that's why I just ignore them.
Like, a part of me is like, shouldn't we just screenshot and make a montage at the end or something? And it's like, no.
They don't exist.
No, they don't exist. But for me, it still tickled me every time we would get it. Like, And it sucks because some of them were just so funny that I didn't save them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just had some ridiculous stuff about, like, oh, my child, like, I don't want my child seeing this cartoon. It's like, yeah, we're not making it for children. Like, this is an adult. It's like, we literally say it's not, like, in the trailer, literally the words,
yeah,
it's not for kids.
And that's not the same thing. Big Mouth is a show about, like, middle school kids learning to deal with,
yeah,
hormones. That is about kids. It is not a kid's show.
Yeah.
It's an adult show, and it's on Netflix. It's fine. This exists, you know?
Yeah.
It's also because the idea with your show, what I get from it is that you actually want to deconstruct stereotypes, to educate people, to give an education about sexuality, about kinks, so that people will actually be able to practice in a really safer way, and more open, more benevolent.
It came from, I'm in a lot of groups, sex positive groups and other kinds, and you'd see people ask for advice, and especially in some of the kink groups, you'd see subs specifically, I mean everybody, but specifically subs, most likely women, coming into the group and saying, well, you know, my dom just told me I have to do this thing, and I don't really want to do it. Am I allowed to say no? He said I'd be a bad sub if I said no.
Mm.
And you see that kind of question over and over and over. And I was like, we have resources. They're scattered. And if someone becomes polyamorous, you give them The Ethical Slut. That's the book. There's one book everybody reads right off the bat. But for kink, there isn't. Really, there's definitely some podcasts I recommend. There's definitely some articles to recommend, but
mm-hmm.
there's no one source where you're new. And so you watch something like 50 Shades, and maybe you do some quick Googling, or you watch some porn, and then you're like, oh, I got it. And then that's how people are doing unsafe things. That's how you get fake doms. So the purpose of our show is it's animated, and it has me and Javé, my co-host, who's a sex educator. And we are just basically out on a mission to save people from making, you know, unfortunate choices when they first learn kink. So
yeah.
we'll show up and be like, hey, that thing you're about to try, I got some suggestions. And then we'll go through like the history of the kink and the subtleties and the vocabulary, but always with telling jokes and using a lot of like, stylistic choices
okay.
for animation. That's the objective.
That sounds so amazing. So we'll talk about this a little bit more in a second part, okay?
Okay. All right.
Great. This is the end of the first part of this episode with Emily and Gabrielle. I hope you enjoyed it. In the next part, we'll mainly focus on their adult animated series, Welcome to Kinkyville, the idea behind this project, what it is about. We'll also talk about social norms, presentation of kinks in society, in movies and TV shows, as well as sex work and some of the struggles of sex workers. Feel free to send me a message to comment, share, like, and save my post if you like them. Also, whether you identify as female, male, non-binary, trans, heterosexual, gay, lesbian, bi, pan, monogamous, polyamorous, etc. If you are kinky, we want to hear your story. So if you ever want to participate to the podcast, please feel free to slide in my DMs or to send me an email. So, will you be my fetish? A curious man.